Salt Lake County mayoral candidate Ben McAdams lays out his economic development plan. The Utah legislature is looking at making changes to the building code, and Rocky Mountain Power is shutting down the carbon power plant. You're listening to the KUER News Pod for Wednesday, October 17th. I'm Brian Grimmett. Democrat Ben McAdams says if he's elected Salt Lake County mayor, he'll work to remove hurdles for new business owners and maintain quality of life in the valley. That's the cornerstone of the economic plan he unveiled yesterday outside the CHD Healthcare Services corporate headquarters. KUER's Whitney Evans reports.
McAdams says it's tough for businesses to make the leap from startup to up and running.
Every second that a small business owner stands behind a planning and development counter seeking a permit or trying to find out if they've been approved or in compliance with burdensome regulations, they lose potential earned revenue.
McAdams says he'll work to reduce the time businesses wait by consolidating the process. He adds he'll work to align the county's economic development plans with those of the state and cities to help families work and play close to home, reducing commute times and infrastructure expenses. Michael Weinholz is the CEO of CHG Healthcare Headquarters. He says McAdams' past experience shows he'll make the right decisions to encourage economic development.
I didn't come to this business as a startup, but knowing State Senator McAdams has worked on issues at the legislature like the Clean Air Act, which is important for attracting a new business to Utah.
McAdams sponsored a resolution during the 2012 legislative session to encourage educators to include in the driver's education courses information about how driving affects air quality. Whitney Evans, KUER News.
Republican congressional candidate Mia Love has raised twice as much money as incumbent Democrat Jim Matheson over the last 3 months. Campaign disclosures show Love raised $965,000 from July through September, much of it after gaining national exposure with a speech at the Republican National Convention. Federal Election Commission reports show Matheson raised about $470,000. The Utah legislature will be looking at changes to the state's building code to make homes and businesses much more energy efficient. KBR's Dan Bomas took a look at some homes today that meet the new standards.
Garbett Homes Terrace Soul Development in South Salt Lake meets and even exceeds the new 2012 building code standard. The recommendation from the state's Uniform Building Code Commission requires making homes much more airtight, among other things. Energy Inspector Stephen Thon showed reporters just how that's done with foam sealing the top of exterior walls.
Most of the air leakage, if you seal up there, you don't have to worry about the rest of it as much. It's all in the top.
The Utah legislature voted down an update to the code in its last session, but Kevin Emerson with Utah Clean Energy is optimistic it'll happen this time.
We're not going to get the full 2012 energy code, and we're not going to get the full newest energy code. We're going to get some of the best parts.
Garbett has already sold all 60 homes in the development. It says customers are paying about the same price as they would for similar new homes in the same neighborhood. Dan Bomas, KUER News.
Rocky Mountain Power generates most of the power used to serve its customers in Utah, Wyoming, and Idaho by burning coal. But it's planning to shut down the carbon power plant, a coal-fired generating station just outside Helper. Last week, I sat down with Chad Tepley, the company's vice president for resource development. He says new environmental regulations make keeping older and smaller coal plants going very expensive.
With the emerging environmental regulations, for example, that you've seen and heard about, including regional haze rules that our Environmental Protection Agency is currently ruling on, both in the states of Utah, Wyoming, as well as in adjacent states to those in which we operate. With those requirements and compliance obligations that are set forth under those emerging environmental regulations, the first question is always, does that compliance mechanism exist technically? Secondly, does that compliance mechanism make sense for our customers? So we continually assess emerging obligations on a unit-by-unit basis in that regard.
What are you being asked to do with your coal plants?
In general, under the regional haze rules, I'll focus on that discussion first. Under the regional haze rules, we're largely being asked to improve visibility in the region. States like Utah, Wyoming, New Mexico, and others have been engaged in this process for many, many years, reviewing emissions not only from individual units in Utah, but also across those other states. And generally, The pollutants that you focus on with respect to regional haze reductions include pollutants such as particulate matter, sulfur dioxide, and nitrogen oxides. So our projects to date since 2005 have largely focused on those pollutants.
And what is done about them? What kinds of retrofits are you required to put into your systems to deal with that?
Depending on the pollutant that you're focusing on, for particulate, for example, certain units to meet the particulate emission rates that are required by the EPA would look at installing something called a baghouse, which is largely, if you want to correlate it to something in your house, largely a big vacuum bag, if you overly simplify the installation, that removes particulate from the emissions. Otherwise, other pollutants are controlled by equipment that we call scrubbers. Those scrubbers are typically focused on removal of sulfur dioxide, from the flue gas stream. And then if you focus on NOx, the other pollutant that I mentioned earlier, typically what you focus on there is the combustion process. So low NOx burners are typically installed on a coal-fired facility to reduce NOx. Low NOx burners basically improve the combustion process and reduce that pollutant at its source.
Is the future of coal limited? I mean, for coal for electric power production in the West, is it going to be here with us forever, or eventually will Rocky Mountain Power have to get out of the coal business?
I think what you're seeing is a transition to lower carbon emitting resources, with the challenge there being keeping a focus on baseload dispatch capability. So what you will tend to see across the country, including new resources that we, PacifiCorp, are building, tend to be focused on natural gas resources while maintaining a base of our coal resources because, as we discussed, those still actually are the lowest cost denominator on a dispatchable basis.
Will it be the lowest cost source in the future?
I think that's largely dependent on where legislation goes, particularly with respect to CO2. On a natural gas-fired facility, you typically are able to achieve about a 40% to 50% reduction on CO2 emissions when you transition from coal to gas. So obviously a very large driver in the difference between coal and gas.
Chad Tepley is PacifiCorp's Vice President for Resource Development and Construction. That's the parent company of Rocky Mountain Power.
The number of personal bankruptcies in Utah has been falling, but the rate is still fourth highest in the United States. The Salt Lake Tribune reports Utah's bankruptcy filing rate is 5.99 petitions for every 1,000 people. That compares to 3.97 per thousand nationwide. The U.S. Bankruptcy Court for Utah reports its filings dropped 13% in the first 9 months of this year. A federal judge has granted a partial summary judgment in a racial discrimination lawsuit against Holmes & Holmes Industrial. A supervisor at the Magna-based construction company allegedly referred to three African-American employees with racial slurs almost every time he spoke to them and frequently told racist jokes. Judge Dale Kimball found the behavior was constitutionally offensive. He also objected to the firm's anti-harassment policy, which required employees to report harassment to the same supervisor that was doing the harassing. A Millard County deputy sheriff shot and killed a man in a struggle that followed a chase Monday evening. The deputy was responding to a report of a vehicle theft on the Kanash Paiute Indian Reservation. Corey Kanash died in the struggle, while another suspect was captured Tuesday morning. The deputy was treated at a hospital for injuries he incurred in the fight and put on administrative leave while the case is investigated. The FBI has arrested a man accused of disrupting a Delta Airlines flight after it landed in Salt Lake City Monday night. Anatoly Baranovich is accused of damaging the airplane by running up the aisle and attempting to open an emergency exit. The door jammed and caused an emergency slide to malfunction. Baranovich has a court appearance scheduled today. Utahns who paid too much for e-books will share $630,000. That's Utah's portion of a $69 million settlement with publishers Hachette, HarperCollins, and Simon & Schuster. Amazon has told its Kindle customers that their portion of the settlement will turn up as a credit on their accounts. Others can file claims through forms on the Utah Attorney General's office. And that is your KUER News Pod for Wednesday, October 17th. For the latest news and updates from around the state, be sure to check us out online at KUER.org. Until next time, I'm Brian Grimmett.